Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
People are expressing that, and there's valid criticism here today, and I guess it just depends on, there's kind of two camps of people. I don't think there's a whole lot of people that are looking at what happened yesterday and deriving hope out of it. I don't know how you possibly could do that. But does it really mean that this team is doomed? That was an awful performance. It was an awful performance. So how do you put it into perspective of what it means for the entire season is really what the debate point is. And some people, we've had the seasons over. We had the strangest call earlier in the show. A listener said, guys, I'm not going back. And now that I think about that, does that mean he's not going back to watching and caring about the Lions? Right. Because he put it in the context of, like, it's historically been so bad. He's not going back to the way it was. And I'm like, I don't even understand that. But we have had people that think this season is now doomed. And I think the concerns are very valid. I'm not condemning Brad Holmes. I'm not completely giving up on the offensive line and the coordinators, but acknowledging that what happened yesterday was not good. And I mean, literally every worry box got checked. Did they protect Jared Goff? Did the interior of the offensive line open up holes? Did they struggle up there? Check. Did the pass rush get the job done?
They did not.
Check. Did the two coordinators excel?
Don't think so.
Check. And so those were the three big concerns that people weighted differently. My biggest one was the interior of the O-line, and it still is.
The other one is this. Is Green Bay really a contender? Yes.
Now, keep in mind, we talked about this last year. You know what started slow last year? Even with Ragnow and Ben Johnson was the offense. Their three lowest 60-minute offensive outputs of the season were games 1, 2, and 3, 20, 16, and 20. Every game after that was better. They started last year slow. At the time, we thought, well, maybe it just has something to do with the starters playing so little in the preseason. They decide not to risk it, and this is the way that they're going to do it. Okay, great. That's fine if that works over the course of time. And last year it worked. They went 15-2 in a regular season, which was really an unbelievable, actually was a historic win total. But when you get right down to it, it didn't matter because they lost in the playoffs. Now they've lost this opener in the least competitive game they've played since the 2023 Baltimore game, almost two calendar years that they've played an uncompetitive football game. That was more concerning because I think it was less competitive than this, and it took place later in the year. This might have more damage because it's an in-division foe, but that team that lost that Baltimore Ravens game actually played for the NFC Championship. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see how it plays itself out. I'm not done with them. I'm not giving up.
Well, no, not by a long shot. I mean, I'll stand by my 11-6 prediction. We'll see where it ends up. But for the crowd that thinks that it's not playing starters in the preseason, I don't think that matters at all. Not even a little. No, I think because the way things work now with the joint practices that they hold with teams, and they were able to get a couple of teams to come in and work with two practices against Miami. I think it was only one practice against Houston. That matters. That's when you get the ones versus the ones. You're not getting that in the preseason. You know, the preseason matters for the guys that are trying to make the roster. Preseason matters a little bit for the new coordinators coming in, getting an opportunity to actually, you know, use those skills in a practice type situation, warm up type situation. But it doesn't matter for Jared Goff. It doesn't matter for Penei Sewell or Aiden Hutchinson. That stuff doesn't.
Well, I guess I bring it up because we brought it up last year, and
I probably said the same thing last year.
You might have. Obviously, some people disagree with you, but we've had that call today. But at the end of the day, A lot of football to be played. And, you know, there's smart people that have been running this organization, smart people coaching. I'm glad Dan Campbell is our guy in charge. I really like Hank Fraley. 248-539-9797. Champ and Chump, let's get him in. Let's get back to your phone calls. Greg is in Ann Arbor next. Hi, Greg.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I just wanted to comment kind of on both sides of the ball. I think that it's not anything new, but I don't think that Jared Goff is a QB that can extend plays when he's pressured, right? So obviously the offense is gonna roll when he's got time. There's nothing new there, and we saw that yesterday. I think that Green Bay is going to finish on both sides of the ball in the upper half of the league. They're a good team. They've got playmakers on both sides of the ball. I mean, at the same time, we've got an offensive coordinator cutting his teeth in Lambeau against a solid defense. So that's a tough game to go into, especially when Goff is getting pressured every play. I think we're good on the defensive side of the ball. I think that the landscape of that game is very different if Anzalone hangs on to that pass or if we don't get that defensive holding call and Branch takes it to the house. So I know that we got dominated in that game, kind of on both sides of the ball, but I think that, you know, with the defense having to be on the field for so long, it was just tough. There were some blown assignments, but let's be real. At that point in the game, if Anzalone hangs onto that ball, they're still in the mix. And it was just, you know, a defensive coordinator that it's a young guy in Shepherd. You know, this is his first go at it. So we got to cut him a little bit of slack. Coaching in Lambeau against that. I mean, they got a top tier offense. Let's just be honest there. So, you know, the sky isn't falling, but I think that the Lions will be successful if we give Goff time. That's just how it's going to go. And on the flip side, it's going to put pressure on the defense when we can't put the ball in the end zone because they just will be on the field for the whole game. I mean, what do you guys think?
Well, they did win time of possession yesterday, but look, it's a type of deal where everything you said is accurate. People don't love the idea of hiring coaches that, as you put it, are cutting their teeth or learning on the job. They don't love that, but those guys were hired for a reason. It was faith from Dan Campbell. And, you know, do they deserve time? Like, they're not going to get fired.
Same thing with Ben Johnson, by the way.
They're not going to get fired, okay, today. They're not going to get fired today. And if they did, it would speak to some massive dysfunction. It wouldn't be performance related. If you fire your coordinators after one game and it's performance related, people around the league would be going, whoa.
Well, I mean, and it took a few games before he did it with Anthony Lynn, but
yes.
But Ben Johnson had never been an offensive coordinator before. Had Aaron Glenn been a defensive coordinator? Wasn't he a secondary coach with the Saints? So took a chance on those two guys. Both of those guys now are head coaches in the league. I'm not going to overblow what happened yesterday. It was a bad game, and they have a lot of stuff to work on. In some ways, that's a great thing to come out of the first week and realize we got a lot to work on because you want to keep things fresh. The problem is they lost the game. It works a lot better when you come away with a win and you got a lot of work on. At least you survived it. They didn't survive it. You know, they lost badly in the first half of the football game. Second half, they played much better, and both teams scored 10 points in the second half. They gave up only 93 yards in offense to the Packers in the second half of that game. It was better last night in the second half than it was in the first half. But offensively, the Lions just couldn't finish.
You did bring up something that is important to remember, and that is Dan Campbell will pull the trigger on somebody who's not getting the job done.
Yep.
And I think we should be far from that right now. And so, you know, these guys were hired for a reason. One game doesn't wipe that out.
No, but it was a concern.
It is something
going
to
into
in
the
mind.
Season because you had new guys and you didn't know what to expect from these guys. It's a leap of faith that you're taking. Mm-hmm. Just like it was a leap of faith when he promoted Ben Johnson, was rewarded for that. But we'll see. It's a long season. This is the first week. It sucked having to endure that. They couldn't get anything going offensively and defensively. They couldn't stop the Packers in the first half. You didn't see any kind of pass rush. We were hoping that, Hutch is back. That should solve problems. And it didn't. It didn't solve anything. So was that – I mean, at some point you got to tip your hat to the Packers and say, great job. You guys were really well prepared for this one, and the Lions were not. And you can say they weren't prepared because if they missed assignments, then they weren't prepared.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Doug Carr, Scott Anderson, 97 on a ticket. 248-539-9797. The venting is ongoing. And look, we're allowing people to vent, and there's not a lot of positives that came out of the game. If you're looking for one thing that worked, they did stop the run. But outside of that, they didn't run the ball. It was check down city on offense. Special teams was filled with mistakes. Didn't finish in the red zone. I mean, you know, the pass protection, not great. Pass rush, not great. One of my big concerns was the secondary. I couldn't stand how many guys were running open. But then again, they were guys, you know, Jordan Love had a lot of time. We'll talk with Jared Goff about it tomorrow. Also, Dan Campbell will be on the morning show tomorrow. 248-539-9797. Jason is next. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. All right, Jay.
So I'll make a quick point about the game, which is I think the O-line issues stem beyond just the interior guard and center. I mean, even when you look at our veterans who are supposed to be Sewell and Decker, they had awful games, right? Like, and I know PFF isn't the end-all be-all, but Sewell had his lowest run block and pass blocking ranking he's ever had in his entire career. So I don't think we can just look at the interior and be like, okay, that's
Jason, that's clear. However, I have faith that those guys are going to have – it'd be pretty good.
I mean, I do too, but it just, to me, it kind of speaks to the issue that it seemed like nobody on the line was ready to play. And that's the problem I have, right? And you can blame Russ and you can say stuff like that, but, you know, it's Green Bay's first game too, and they came out ready to play.
Again, the guy in charge of that position, I'm a big fan of Hank Fraley. So I think that that will get addressed.
Yeah. Well, I would say even a bigger issue that came out of the weekend was the JMO contract. Which I wasn't a big fan of. I just don't think it was a good look to sign a second receiver for $30 million a year.
But they didn't sign him for $30 million a year.
What was it, 28?
Well, I think it's a point to mention. It was below 30, which I'm stunned by, that they got that done. Had they waited, because he's got all of this year, all of next year, and then the extension kicks in. So he's got plenty of time on it. If they had waited until after this year or after next year to get that done, that number would be 35, 36, 40 million. I don't know what it would be because the receiver money keeps going up and up and up. They got it for less.
I agree with that. But at the same time, like, it's a cap space, right? Like, we spending $60 million on two receivers doesn't go very far when you have, you know, on Green Bay, they just spent 48 on Parsons, who had more sacks by himself and half the snaps than our whole defense combined. So it just feels like a misappropriation of resources.
So,
like, you can buy a receiver, but did you really,
Jason,
need one?
I guess if you look at recent trends in the NFL, and I've moved off a position which was basically one of my core beliefs in football in the NFL, I actually think offense wins championships now. Last year, Philly kind of bucked that trend a little bit, but I'm okay with them investing in the offense the way that they have. Obviously, your implication there with Parsons is you'd rather do it on the defensive side of the ball. But hey, look, we'll see if that proves to be the case long term. I think if you look at playoff teams over the last 5-6 years, it's the great offenses that are populating the playoffs more than the great defenses.
Do you expect them to sign Aiden Hutchinson?
I do.
Okay, so yep. What it effectively is you're getting Hutchinson and J-Mo is what they're going to end up doing. For long term, could you have gotten Parsons in the mix with that? No, you'd have to choose Parsons
long term,
or to either choose between Parsons and Hutch, or between Parsons and J-Mo.
248-539-9797. Mike in Sterling Heights, you're next. Hello, Mike.
Hey, fellas.
Hi, Mike.
Listen, I'm 62, man.
For sure.
And we all want the Lions to be good. But sometimes when we come with a different vantage point, a different thought cycle, not that we're negative. I'm just trying to be real. I grew up watching Michigan college football and the Pittsburgh Steelers professional football. They dominated because of their offensive line and their defensive line. So that's how I think. And when you look at the Lions, when you look at their quarterback, the strength and weakness of him, last year he had five bodyguards. The five bodyguards worked great together, which made all five of them better. Now you have two bodyguards, and you have a quarterback who's not mobile. I'm upset because they didn't even add, knowing this, let me calm down, they didn't add a fullback. Because a tight end, when you put a tight end in that position to block, he's not a threat to run the ball. So that thought cycle pissed me off, along with...
You're upset. I mean, just understand. You're upset they didn't add a fullback?
You know who else is not a threat to run the ball?
No.
Fullback.
Listen to what I'm saying. If you're going to have what you have, you have to have a counteract to that. If you don't have a fullback on your team, you can't counter some of the moves. You know that the rush is coming straight up the middle. Am I correct? Is that our weakness?
Did the Lions have an issue because they didn't have a fullback last year or the year before?
No. I'm just.
No, you're upset they don't have. No, own it, Mike. If you're upset they don't have a fullback on this roster.
No, I'm upset they did not know that Ragnow was going to retire. Okay? They did not know that.
I think they may have known that.
They may have known it, but we act like we didn't know it. But anyway we look at
it. They used their second round pick on Tate Ratledge, who plays guard or center. I think they had an inkling.
Go ahead.
I think they had an inkling. That's why they went out and got a guy. They drafted a guy with a high upside. That's why they also wait a few rounds later, drafted another offensive lineman, an interior offensive lineman.
Hold on.
I agree.
Did he start this call announcing his age?
Yeah.
He's 62 years old.
That's right.
And he thinks the key is adding a fullback.
He doesn't want to admit that's what he was saying, but that's what he was saying.
We're this close to getting to, they need to move to the wing tee. I mean, you know what's never going to get said the rest of this season by anybody on the desk at ESPN, anybody on the desk at Fox, any color commentator? Albert Breer is not going to write about it. Ian Rappaport's not going to write about it. Nobody else is going to say the Lions should have added a fullback. Am I wrong?
No, sir. I don't think you're wrong.
David, you're next on 97 on the ticket. Hi, David.
Hello, Doug and Gator.
Oh, God.
Oh, yes. It's me. I'm back.
Dude, where was your phone last year? Where was your phone all of last year, David?
I mean, I tried to call, but my man wouldn't pull me through.
No. Your calls are one of a kind.
Okay. Let me say this. Doug and Gator, you guys are making excuses for the Lions, and what? I predict they will be 8-9.
All right.
You did last year, too.
What'd you say?
You did before last year, too, and you did the year before that they would suck.
They're definitely going to suck this year.
Well, third time's a charm for you then, right?
It's a charm third year. Look, you have no one on that defensive line and no offensive line. No defense to stop the opposing team, and you can't be at run the ball or pass protect. This is going to be a terrible season. Aiden Hutchinson, you're talking about he's 100%, 100% to walk up and down the street, not to play in the NFL. This guy was no factor yesterday, no being, no nothing. And then one of you guys was a Doug. You got to say you were the secondary. The secondary is only good as the defensive line, and the defensive line couldn't get to the quarterback. This team is going to be terrible. I blame this on Brad Holmes.
Bring it home. There you go.
All he had to do was go on the drive. There were a bunch of defensive ends.
That's all he had to do.
He could have got Landon Jackson in the third round. He was taken in the third round after the Lions took Tesla. And he played at the same school as Tesla, Arkansas. That guy is 6'7", has 7.5 sacks, and he was playing more in line on the defensive line. That guy's going to be a beast for Buffalo.
But how do they address the retiring Frank Ragnow at the draft if you're going to take Landon Jackson, a 6'7" defensive end?
Listen, that guy, Glasnow.
All right.
He is fine with me. I ain't see no problem with him playing center. And remember, you thought we had
no offensive line, but you thought Glasgow was good yesterday.
Glasgow is good. But them two guys, you got Mahogany and Ratledge, man, they're terrible. They play like rookies. Beginners.
They are rookies and beginners.
David, it's good to hear from you after a year hiatus. But I'm not shocked. 248-539-9797. We'll talk about the college teams next, plus your champ and chumbos, your that phone happened. Calls. Gator, I have a point of clarification that I need to make.
Yeah.
About Oklahoma.
Okay.
We'll get to that today at 12:30.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's
outside
not,
of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
One here on 97.1 The Ticket. Back to your phone calls in a minute. Gator, I know you're very pleased with the way the Spartans won that game. Michigan State fans have to feel good about it. I saw a Michigan game. Let me first get this clarification. I came away from Norman, Oklahoma, regretting the fact that when the Big Ten nabbed in Nebraska, I really wish they also would have nabbed Oklahoma, poached them from what at the time was the Big 12. In fact, out of all of the conference expansion, if the Big Ten was going to do it, the play was Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Texas. I talked to the Oklahoma people about it, and they were like, yeah, there was some talk. The AD at the time was interested in the Big Ten. I loved Oklahoma. Norman is an awesome town. The people were fantastic, welcoming, helpful, suggesting fans, inviting you to their tailgate, offering food and drink. I mean, the campus is cool. The stadium is awesome. The tradition there is great. Ray's Barbecue. I think it's Darrell Ray, who was the former Oklahoma player, played with the Jets, opened up a barbecue joint. Loved Ray's Barbecue. Very good. Gator.
Did you get the chicken with the blood juice?
No, there's no such thing. Oh. We were driving to pick up my wife from the airport because she flew in Friday, and we passed a bar called Mooney's. And we're like, this place looks kind of cool off the side. It was a biker bar. We ended up in a biker bar.
Nice.
They were great. But for future reference,
okay.
So everybody knows, because I'm trying to check out everything. Like, I'm trying to check out where the students hang out. I'm trying to check out where, like, the post-student crowd hangs out. What's a great sports bar? For future reference, Switzer's Locker Room. Not a bar, a storage facility. Just for future reference, you learn your lessons the hard way. Switzer's Locker Room is a storage facility.
Okay.
As far as the game's concerned, That kid from Little Elm, Texas, very well may win the Heisman. He was not 1999 Donovan McNabb good, but he was pretty damn good. I came away very impressed. And
you're talking about John Mateer?
Yes, John Mateer, the quarterback. The Oklahoma was the better team. And, you know, there's, I don't know that there's much debate about that. But Michigan was hanging around. And when you're hanging around, and they did this last year in the Ohio State game and the Alabama game, where it felt like they were hanging around, even when they were winning, it felt like they were hanging around. That game could have been worse. Let me be clear about that. But they were hanging around. And when you're hanging around, the way you pull off of, find a way to pull off a victory is to make the makeable plays. And there were a couple of them in that game when a great kicker, and he is great, misses a short field goal. That's a very makeable play. The sequence where Oklahoma was on their only touchdown drive of the second half, Mateer threw a ball to Jair Hill, and he didn't intercept it. And the next play, a third and long, Brandon Hillman came on a blitz, had him dead to rights. Mateer got out of it and completed a pass inside the Michigan 20, inside the red zone, led to a touchdown. Those were the makeable play moments that I look at that they just didn't make. And, you know, I mean, they're not there yet. And I think they, if they make those plays, they had a real shot to pull off a game that Oklahoma looked to me to be the better team. But if you're hanging around, there are going to come moments in a game where you have to make some plays. And they just didn't make, for them, makeable plays. The Gio Ahadi injury up front, not good. That did not look good to me. I have concerns for what was already a concerning offensive line.
He did walk off the field, though, right?
He didn't put much pressure on it, much weight on it at all.
But it wasn't arms around. Was it arms around the?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I thought it looked like he was walking it off, which hopefully it's a good sign for him because
he's
the best lineman they have,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Andrew Sprague came into the game hurt and played through it. They already lost Andrew Babaloa, which I think he would have been in the mix. Marlon Klein's out up front. They struggled. And I think, you know, I know there's play calling issues and fans wish this and that. It's not so different than the Lions. It's really hard to call effective plays when you can't block. Now, the quarterback, the young quarterback, has potential. I've said it all summer, tried to tamp down expectations that there are going to be freshman moments, and he's got to learn from them. Like, probably the biggest thing, there's clearly communication issues when receivers do one thing and a quarterback does something completely different. And that's probably more than anything a product of just starting to play together in youth. There were times where he was rolling out and could have gotten good yardage, and he goes for the big play and passes instead of carries the football. Now, was he coached not to carry the football? Maybe. I don't think that's the case in my discussions with coaches behind the scenes, but it's okay. He's a young kid. Here's my concern for Michigan. After two games, I'm not sure what they have to build on. I'm not sure that they've established anything to build on. And that's something that's has to get sorted out. They are in a right now place that I'm not sure where this season goes, but game this week to try and get themselves better. One other thing, Jayshon Barham, the last play he made forced an Oklahoma field goal attempt where he tracked down, was it Satania? I think it was Satania on a crossing route. Looked like he might score. Barham made a touchdown saving tackle, but he got hurt. Now, this may not matter at all, but Michigan's next defensive snap was the kneel down. Jayshon Barham was not on the field for that. Now, they knew he was going to kneel down. I'm worried a little bit about what the situation is there. They just announced this morning that Biff Poggi will be the acting head coach the next two games. But
Of the self-imposed suspension, whatever. I think here's a positive. You're looking for things to build on if you're Michigan. Mm-hmm. I think you've got an awfully talented quarterback that is going through – he's going to have some growing pains because he's a true freshman. But he's got so much potential. What I like about what he does, he hasn't turned the ball over, which is big. You know, don't make those mistakes. But maybe he's playing it too close to the vest, and now it's time to unleash and just go ahead and make some plays as opposed to, you know, being afraid to make the play that ends up being an interception or something. Justice Haynes is a game-breaking back. Once he got outside, he was gone. Mm-hmm. And that speed was on full display with that 75-yard touchdown run. That was exciting. Can you build off of those two things? You mentioned Marlon Klein was out. How long is he out for?
So he was in uniform, but when we were watching him go through warmups, he was mostly a spectator.
So maybe he plays this week against Central Michigan, maybe not. But that's a huge part of the offense because that's the guy that was targeted the most with Bryce Underwood in the first week against New Mexico. You take that away, and there goes a quarterback's best friend. So getting him back will help out. Keeping an eye on the injury front, that could be big. Because if Michigan loses El Hadi and loses Barham for any length of time, that could be very troublesome for Michigan moving forward because those are two guys, one on offense and one on defense. But I do think you also have to look at Oklahoma is a pretty good football team. Yep. I don't know how good they are. Mateer played well, made plays with his feet. Well, the one, there was the touchdown that the running back had, actually not the running, it was one of Mateer's runs. Just well blocked. Just well blocked throughout.
Yep.
And sometimes you just tip your hat and say, they executed really well.
Michigan State on the other side. That was one of those games. I called it a kind of a flip, you know, one of the games that could change the shape and the course of their season, and they got the win.
Yeah, it was kind of all over the place for a while there. Things you didn't expect. I did not expect to see Omari Kelly fumble the ball twice, let alone lose one of those fumbles. That was no good. Damn near lost his second one when he hurdled the player and then his own knee took out the football. But looking at the positive side of it, Aiden Childs made a lot of plays in the game. There were other plays you're like, where is that throw going? But there were more of the plays like, that's a solid throw. That's the right decision to tuck it and run. He was making plays with his feet more in the game on Saturday night than we've seen him make in the past. That was good. Also taking care of the football. Four touchdown passes, no interceptions. And that goes with the first week where he didn't throw any interceptions either. He had the touchdown run, which was really nice. Michigan State able to move the ball. Mekhi Frazier, another solid game, 81 yards on the ground for them on Saturday night. The defense, stout against the run. Michigan State, that's going to be the calling card. It's going to be tough to run against the Spartans. However, not a pass rush. They did not get home against Dylan Lonergan. And that's a problem. When a quarterback steps back and throws it 45 times in the game and he's not sacked, that's not good. And they got to clean up the stupid stuff. Jordan Hall got hit for a late hit penalty, which could have really destroyed Michigan State. Fortunately, they were able to survive that. But it's a dumb play, and you know better than that. You can't touch the quarterback after he's thrown the football like that. But not getting a pass rush, is that an indictment on Michigan State's pass rush if they're unable to get home, or is that more of looking at Boston College and saying this is a program that has put forth a lot of NFL talent, offensive linemen into the NFL, and maybe they just have that thing working really well in pass protection? Maybe a combination of both. I don't think Michigan State's is a great pass rushing team, but they need to be better than what we saw on Saturday night. In the end, I thought that the pass play that Childs made for the 2-point conversion was huge. I don't think it was as easy as it made it look. They had to throw over because there were two guys in the vicinity. He had to throw over the hands of the tight end and get it to the receiver in the back, and it was great. And Nick Marsh is the real deal. Nick Marsh belongs in the same conversation as all the other good running great receivers in football, and that includes Jeremiah Smith and includes Ryan Williams at Alabama.
248-539-9797. Get your phone calls and feedback in. We will do more of that when we continue here on 97.1 The Ticket. Hey, just for the record, Kang, remember Gator last week put together a 12-team Moneyline parlay? It hit.
Yeah.
It hit. He took 12 college football favorites of 10 points or more to win, and they all one. Now it was on the money line, so you took heavy favorites just to win the game.
I think it would end up being like plus 163.
It wasn't like the biggest return you've ever seen. But.
Oh, no, but I mean, you know, it worked out well enough to make up for some mistakes I made elsewhere. But
so well done.
Yeah, I was waiting on, the last one I was waiting on was Navy, because that game we had a 3-hour delay or something like that because of rain.
Yep.
And that was in the balance. I'm like, come on, come on, come on. And then all of a sudden Navy just explodes for 3 touchdowns late in the game. And I was good. I was concerned that I'd forgotten if I had taken Clemson or not. And Clemson had gotten down to a 17-0 hole.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't good.
Dude, that was the one. And yeah. The funny thing is I saw the Clemson score and I immediately thought, ooh, I bet Clemson's one of his heavy favorites. 12-team money line parlay.
Yeah. And I had to remind myself because Louisville did not cover and they were part of my parlay. I'm like, oh, crap. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I bet money line.
Yeah.
We're good. You, my friend, you called your shot. Absolutely called it. Was it South Florida?
South Florida over Florida. And also Ohio U.
And you got Ohio U over with the cover. Did they beat West Virginia?
They beat West Virginia. They beat West Virginia and South Florida beat Florida.
The South Florida over Florida was so smart.
Saucy.
Because of what they did to Boise State. Mm-hmm. And that was just smart. And thank you for that. Yeah. I did jump on that one.
Oh, did you? Good. Yeah. Anyway, well done by you.
And you.
248-539-9797. Let's get back to your phone calls. We go to Ed in Alpena. Hi, Ed.
Hey, guys. First, let me say, we need a fullback. Hey, you know, I got a little concerned. I looked up John Morton's, where he's been recently and the coaching, and I think he could be Anthony Lynn soon. He may not make it to dinner, just like Anthony Lynn did not make it to dinner. And, I mean, I think I wish they would have went out and got Josh McDaniels before he ended up back in New England.
So, you know what's interesting about John Morton, Ed, is that Dan Campbell has faith. Dan Campbell picked him over other candidates for a reason. I'm intrigued as to see over the course of time as to why. And if he's wrong, if it was a bad hire, at least we know, based upon what you brought up with Anthony Lynn, is he won't be stubborn about it. He'll just move on.
Nope. Yeah, because I looked up John Morton, where he's been, and he's not stayed anywhere very long. I mean, a year here, 2 years there, and he was never really – you know, in charge of a full-on offense like Detroit has.
No, but if you also look back at it, part of his time was spent here with the Lions and with Dan Campbell, and that, I think, was the first year that he was here. He was here for all that, so he knows all that. And if you were to look at Ben Johnson's resume prior to being named offensive coordinator with the Lions, you might be saying the same thing. I'm not saying that he's going to be Ben Johnson, but I'm saying – you got to let this thing cook for a little bit.
I'm gonna freak out until
halfway through the season.
I'm going to spread the rumor that you said that John Morton is the next Ben Johnson.
All right, go ahead. Do that. That works for me.
Hey, I'm good with that.
All right, thanks.
Take care.
If there's a problem, if it's not going to work out, I have full confidence that Dan Campbell will make an adjustment because he's already shown that he would do that. But I don't.
It's a big part of being a head coach.
Yeah. And going back to the game yesterday, I don't think the offense sputtered because of offensive play calling. I think the offense sputtered because of missed assignments and just the interior line was not good enough.
Every play caller gets some wrong. It's really hard to get them right when you're struggling to run block and also pass block.
Yeah.
Gina is in Wyandotte next. Hello, Gina.
Hi.
Hey.
I'm not going to ask how are you. Yeah. I just want to say thanks for working today because this cannot be easy.
It's not as much fun as it can be.
It's not fun.
Yeah, exactly. And 63, but I'm only 53, so I will that disclaimer too. I grew up watching Eric Hipple. My favorite player was Billy Sims, so you know I'm a longtime fan.
Credentials right. are in
these
order.
These people need to chill out. Like, please talk them off the ledge or I can't listen anymore. Our offensive line, our defensive line is going to be just fine. Jared Goff is a good quarterback. Jahmyr Gibbs, oh my gosh, good running back, right?
Right.
Demo, right? Good running back, right? Sam LaPorta, oh gosh, good wide receiver. Holy cow, did you see that catch from Tesla? Holy, So what's wrong with these people? Talk me down now, because these guys that are all...
Well, it's the totality of what happened in the field. It's if that's the only game film we have to go on, and that is the only game film we have to go on in 2025, but they're going to play 16 more of these, and the people that have been... that have taken rosters to great heights, are many of them are still here. Not all of them, but many of them. So, you know, there's less, like if they didn't lose a coordinator and they still had Ragnow when this happened, I would be way more confident that they were going to turn it around. I still have confidence, but it's fair to question whether or not it's going to happen. Now, the people that are giving up on the season, you can do whatever you want, but I think it's absurd.
Look, you can, the players that had the ball in their hands, when the ball is in their hands, they're playmakers. They're great, right? We know that. They've got that track record. Where there isn't a track record is the three guys in the middle of the offensive line. And they need to get up to speed quickly in terms of knowing the assignments and getting the right coverages and all that. Because Green Bay, it felt like they had a two-yard head start on every play when it came to the Lions offense, because Jared Goff had no time to throw, and it felt like that line was already in on him when the ball was snapped. It was really kind of strange. I haven't seen the Lions offensive line as a unit play that poorly, and it's not just on the three guys, right? It's the entire line. Penei Sewell didn't look like he was having his best game. Taylor Decker on the other side. I mean, all the guys on the offensive line can share some blame, and I'm sure Jared Goff does too, because part of his responsibility is working with Graham, with Glasgow to figure out what the coverages are and making sure your linemen are aligned the way they should be.
Let's go to Matt in Oak Park. You're next. Hello, Matt. Matt, are you there?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Got you. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Couple things. So I think everyone, I get why people are freaking out. You know, it wasn't a pretty watch yesterday, speaking of the Lions. But I think where everyone's kind of missing is, got to give Green Bay some credit. Like, they were picking up all of our blitzes. They stayed in that two deep shell coverage on their defense, and they weren't really letting us go over the top. So I think they had a long time to prepare. I think they kind of knew what Johnny Morton and Shep were gonna try to do, and they game planned really well.
Why do you think they knew what they were going to try and do, given they were both debuting?
Because Johnny Morton has been very open about what he was going to try to do with our offense, right? And he's, you know, he said we're going to take deep shots. We want to push the ball down the field. And you saw Green Bay, they just came with two deep safeties the entire game and made us take the underneath stuff. Okay. So I think, and then Shep, you know, he's going to be aggressive. We weren't getting pressure with four. So we started blitzing, and Green Bay kept the back end. They kept Tucker Kraft to Chip Hutch. It seemed like they kind of knew what we were going to try to do and try to force them to do, and got to give them credit. I don't think it's time to panic. We've got a game next week, but I think it's going to be interesting to see how both coordinators adjust going forward.
You know, it's a good point, because the football players and football teams aren't made up of chess pieces that only move one direction. There's a lot of variability from week to week. And so, yeah, it is one game. Green Bay deserves credit, and I don't want to belabor it. Yes, they deserve credit. But, you know, we're not doing the show in Green Bay, Wisconsin. But yes, they do deserve credit from a game plan perspective. Their players, I think they fed off the crowd. A lot of times when you get in these situations in, you know, like season openers or first big game or whatever the case may be, there's a special buzz in a building, and there's like this hubris that the team can feed off of, and your job is to survive it. Survive it at the beginning of a game, and then get down to the business of winning the game when that, you know, new car smell wears off for a team in a season. You get that crowd bump, and then it's about the business of, okay, can we win the game? Find a way to win the game. And they didn't happen. 248-539-9797. More your phone calls and feedback coming up. It is 97.1 The Ticket.
Make builders.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.